about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is News for the Rest of Us. Thanks for tuning in. This first day of May marks International Workers' Day, or May Day, as it's often referred to. In Canada, unions will be holding rallies and solidarity events across the country, celebrating recent labor victories and advocating for better conditions for their members and workers. This week on the show, labor reporter Gabriella Kalugay-Kasuga sits down with Aaron Westaway from the Ottawa Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines, or OCHRP. The two go over the plans OCHRP has in store for this year's May Day celebrations and discuss how the rights of workers globally are something Canada should care about. Here are Westaway and Kalugay-Kasuga in conversation. Take a listen.
Hey Aaron, thank you so much for joining us on Rabble Radio today.
Thanks for having me.
Just to get started, could you introduce yourself, your organization, and what you guys do?
Sure. So my name's Aaron. I am the Secretary General for the Ottawa Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines, which is the Ottawa-based chapter of the International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines, or ICHRP. We are a solidarity organization that works to raise awareness about the human rights situation in the Philippines, but also to mobilize and organize people in solidarity with the Philippines. You know, we do the usual stuff like rallies, we do educational events or teach-ins, but we also do more material support in terms of organizing exposure trips to the Philippines. We've got long-term connections between unions in Canada and the Philippines. I went on a trip in 2024. It was really good for grounding what exactly I'm talking about when I talk to people about the Philippines. And then also working very closely with local Philippine community organizations for youth and migrants in particular.
Yeah, and I've been super excited to do this interview with you, Aaron. As many of our loyal Rabble readers and radio listeners know, I'm actually Filipino as well. So I have heard of your organization before, and I'm very excited to talk a bit about the solidarity aspect of the work you guys do. I wanted to center it around May Day, and I know that part of the May Day activities for OCHRP is there's an organizer from the Philippines who is coming to Ottawa, who will be speaking with MPs, with some union representatives, and also participating in the May Day rally. Could you tell me a bit more about that? What's going on there?
Yeah, so our guest in Canada is Danilo Ramos. He is the chairperson for KMP, or Kusang Magbabukid ng Pilipinas. KMP is the largest peasant union in the Philippines. About 1 to 2 million people are organized farmers in the Philippines, from what I can remember. He is doing a cross-country tour. He was in Montreal recently. He's in Ottawa this week. He'll be headed to Toronto next and then Alberta. He did a similar tour in 2022 where he talked about issues facing farmers and peasant communities. Just a brief rundown, why we say peasant is because there's still recognition that there's still a semi-feudal system in the Philippines. A lot of the Philippines is still an agricultural economy predominantly, and many of the people who work in the Philippines work as in farming communities, even indigenous communities still do a lot of subsistence agriculture, and a lot of the land is owned by big landlords. And a lot of the issues that farmers face is high debt. They have to sell a lot of their crop to these landlords as rent, but they also have to like get their stuff to the international market, where the prices that they have to sell them are much lower than the prices that it costs to make these things or to make these agricultural products, these foods like rice or sugarcane. If you're driving through the Philippines, you'll see pineapple plantations and coconut plantations just to the south of the capital. So Kao Danning, as he's named by a lot of Filipinos, is coming to speak about these issues. And I was mentioning in 2022 when he was here, he spoke a lot about because the Marcos Jr. administration was very young at the time. Marcos, Bongbong Marcos, son of the late president, Ferdinand Marcos Sr., that a lot of people will know for ruling for martial law in the 70s and 80s. Marcos had just been elected in May 2022, and Marcos was one of the Marcos administration's first things was basically just to offer peasants loans. And those loans are just going to increase the precarity of a lot of farmer situations. But so we'll be talking about those economic issues. But the other thing that iChirp wants to highlight is that the Philippines is also an increasingly militarized state. The Philippines has been dealing with a long-term civil war between the government of the Republic of the Philippines and the Communist Party and various revolutionary groups aligned with it, such as the New People's Army. And so the government has embarked on a counterinsurgency campaign. But the unfortunate reality is that basically the guns of the state have been turned on activists. It happened during Marcos Sr.'s time. It happened very infamously during the former president Duterte's regime. Many people will be very familiar with the drug war that he was elected on. And he is currently in the International Criminal Court for that. So we're working to highlight those things during Ka Danning's visit, because the countryside in the Philippines is the most militarized part of the country as the security state is being strengthened. Recently, there was the murder of 19 people in Toboso Negros. Negros is an island that is very subjected to militarization. There's a lot of strong landlords there, so farmers face a lot of the issues that Danilo will be talking about, like land grabbing, even hamleting, where villages find themselves isolated. It's very similar to things that happened during the Vietnam War. And yeah, also as part of our solidarity, connecting him to struggles in Canada, we're arranging visits with union leaders, with members of parliament. We've had guests from the Philippines speak with members of parliament before on human rights issues in the Philippines, things like the many of the military exercises that happen, because those also affect rural communities, displace indigenous and farmer communities. They'll deny fisher folk the waters that their livelihood depends on. It's going to be a good visit. We'll also have him marching in May Day with workers in Canada. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and I was hoping you could tell me more about that solidarity aspect. I mean, obviously, as a Filipino, these issues are things that touch really close to home. You know, I have family all over the Philippines in the countryside, things like that. But why is it important for Canadians, and specifically Canadian workers? You mentioned, you know, Danilo is meeting with these union reps and things like that. So why is it important for Canadians and Canadian workers to be aware of these issues? What stake do they have in it?
I think as a lot of progressive activists have been pointing out, even just the last year since Mark Carney became prime minister and resurrected the Liberal Party, there's been a lot of moves by the Canadian government to increasingly towards like an anti-immigrant, to a more austerity-pointed model of governance. Both the Philippines and Canada are affected by neoliberal policies for decades now. But a lot of the defunding of, say, like government services in Canada is also very similar to issues being faced by public sector workers in the Philippines. There's a million Filipinos in Canada because of policies like labor export from the Philippines that are decades old now. Basically, Philippines, there's not a very good job market. So a lot of Filipinos go to the United States, they go to Australia, they go to Japan, they go to Taiwan, they go to the Gulf states. And Canada is a very popular destination for a lot of Filipinos to go abroad, find work, and send money or remittances home to their families. So a lot of Filipinos are, you know, finding themselves increasingly employed in healthcare, the healthcare sector in Canada. They're making your coffee at Tim Hortons. They're scanning your bananas or weighing your bananas at Walmart. Filipinos are increasingly a big part of the Canadian economy and workforce. it's really important for us to recognize like our connected struggle as workers, not just because Filipinos are going to find themselves in Canada working alongside Canadians, but that the economic conditions in the world right now are very tied. You know, there's the current crisis in Iran and the Strait of Hormuz right now. Canada is being less affected right now because obviously we have a stronger capacity for oil production and refinement. But Canada is also being affected by the economic tsunami that's coming from the Strait of Hormuz, similar to countries like the Philippines, where they're actually going through a much stronger oil crisis right now. And that is affecting things like their ability to even, like, you know, we're talking, Kyle Downing is going to be talking about farmers. A lot of farmers are having to leave their crops to rot because they don't have enough oil. Canadians here, I'm hearing increasingly even from my coworkers who drive, just like how expensive oil is, the price of gas is becoming. And that's also going to start affecting things like the prices of our products, the prices of food that you're going to be able to get off the grocery shelf. So our struggles are very tied through government policies. How are respective governments treat the labor struggles in each country? Both the Philippines and Canada have seen a number of strikes in recent years. Philippine workers were recently striking against companies like Nexperia, against companies like Kowloon. Those are like international companies, just at the same time that Canadian workers are striking, you know, in the airlines or are striking for better working conditions in postal services. It's important to solidify these ties of international solidarity, to recognize that Canadian workers, Philippine workers, workers in the United States, these workers, these struggles are not alone. Even if they seem distant, they are tied together by increasingly intersecting conditions across our borders.
Yeah, and you make a good point there about, you know, really all of these issues that we're facing as workers across the world are connected. I'm curious then, so what you mentioned a bit earlier about, you know, these exposure trips, you had gone to the Philippines recently. What does OTRIP do to, you know, strengthen that link and highlight how the struggles of Filipino workers in the Philippines and workers here in Canada, how those struggles are connected?
Yeah, so in particular, the unions that OTRIP has had a long-term connection to in Canada are public sector unions like QP and PSAC. Those collectively represent like a million workers in Canada. And the exposure trips have often been with unions like in the Philippines, with unions like the Alliance of Concerned Teachers. It's one of the largest public sector unions. Courage, Confederation for Unity and Recognition and the Advancement of Government Employees. So it's kind of like the Philippines PSAC. And also other unions like healthcare workers and the KMU, Kilusang Mayo Uno, or the May 1st Movement, very appropriate for this week, which is a private sector union federation. In particular, when we visited the Philippines, so I visited in January 2024, I visited a number of workplaces, such as schools, government offices, agricultural like storehouses, and we basically learned like what are the struggles that Filipino public sector workers especially are increasingly facing. It's very similar to the way that workers here in Canada are facing, which is that the government is in the Philippines is currently pursuing a policy they call right-sizing, but it's basically very similar to like what the Carney government is doing here, where they're phasing out workers out of the public sector. They're looking to increasingly privatize services to help with the load of debt that the respective country is facing. So yeah, Philippine workers are increasingly facing privatization. They're facing contractualization. There's a lot less permanent long-time workers in the Philippines. And also the classic struggle of, you know, fighting for higher wages. Philippine government workers, the highest paid are basically those in the police and the military. They get paid more than nurses. They get paid more than social workers. So there was one or two occasions at the very least where I would have somebody, or we would have somebody speaking to us at an office and start crying because of just how much effort they have had to put into fighting to make sure that they have enough money to put food on the table at home. I think Canadians can connect to that.
So kind of in relation to that, you've gone and you've seen just how shared the struggles are between workers all over the world. I'm curious then, when you come here and you do this organizing to empower workers here, to build solidarity with the Filipino workers all over the world, how do you also combat, I guess we're seeing this rising anti-migrant sentiment. How do you address that given all these things that you have seen and experienced?
When I talk to my coworkers about political issues of housing insecurity, rising food prices, they're often parroting talking points by people on the right about our housing supply isn't great or is going to reach critical levels because, there is some recognition that there is responsibility on the government, say, to build housing supply or provide good jobs, but that those are not open to Canadian workers, that basically the market is being crowded by a lot of migrants. And, when I was in the Philippines, we would go to workplaces like schools, you'd enter a little nursing area or something, and somebody would say oh, you're from Canada? Oh, I have family in Vancouver. I have family in Toronto. I have family in Montreal. And and you even had workers from workers that we met who would ask members of the delegation hey, do you have any tips on how I can get a visa or some type of work permit, how I might be able to immigrate to Canada? There was one case where the last school we visited, the youngest and most energetic person, the staff was afraid of losing her because she wanted to leave the country. And it's not that Philippine migrants want to leave the Philippines. The Philippines is a beautiful country. They're not leaving with the perspective, I'm going to take some poor Canadian's job at a supermarket or at a Tim Hortons, or I'm gonna push out some Canadian nurses by going to a long-term care home in Ontario. Canadians and Filipinos are connected by their increasing precarity. Filipinos try to go through post-secondary education, but there's not a lot of good job opportunities for them. Actually, some of these schools that we went to, there would be a whole trades part of the school, or there would be programs like Korean language programs and such, because Filipino youth are expected to leave the country to places like South Korea, to places like Canada, to find work. They're not expected to stay in the country anymore. So when we talk about the crisis in Canada that workers are facing, it's very easy to pin these issues on migrants, but they're just coming here looking for a better life or working to support their families. They're not coming with an agenda, like a lot of people might make it sound. And Filipinos in Canada, especially, they're predominantly the face of the service industry in Canada, the food sector, healthcare, but those place them in very precarious positions. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the early stages, a lot of the deaths that were being recorded in long-term care, those were of migrants, because those people found themselves on the front line trying to care for patients infected by COVID. And a number of the people who died initially, they were immigrants from Africa or the Caribbean, but a number of those were Filipino as well. When we're fighting for workers in Canada, we're facing a lot of issues, like privatization. We're facing low unionization rates because of how hard it is to form unions when, Walmart or Giant Tiger can just close down your store and get rid of all the current workforce until reopening that. And in some cases, I think that store in Quebec that I'm thinking of, the Supreme Court might even rule in favor of that corporation. We have a long fight ahead of us against corporate greed, for better working conditions for public sector or private sector. And it's important to remember that migrant communities are building up the country. We're having net population stagnation now because Canada is rejecting so many migrants from coming over. And those are going to be very important for sustaining our economy. Obviously, empowering economic growth is not the objective. When we're building worker solidarity, we're trying to make lives better for workers in Canada. We're trying to empower workers to continue to fight for themselves and their fellow co-workers. And it's really important to remember that migrants are there with us. They're also facing the same struggles that Canadians are. Students are having a hard time finding affordable housing or landlords that will properly take care of their workplaces. They're also having to deal with finding good paying jobs, even if it's like jobs at a local grocery store or something. They're just trying to make ends meet as well. The people who are having an impact on our lives are obviously the corporations that employ us and then don't pay us enough, but they're also the governments that we find ourselves under, like the Carney government, like the Ford government, even the history of progressive governments in Canada, like the Liberal Party in the 90s, which, you know, it was the Chrétien government that really started, like, decreasing the amount of money going to the provinces. And so if Ontario is getting less money from the government, from the federal government to be able to support its healthcare industry or to be able to build affordable housing, then that's not the fault of migrants. That's the fault of government policy favoring corporations and trying to offload these social goods to private hands, which are just going to be focused on enriching themselves at the expense of us as workers.
I think you've put it really well. You know, for workers' empowerment, it'll have to come from all of us coming together. And I really appreciate the way you put that and that you are hosting Kai Daning to come here and to speak and to strengthen those international solidarity ties on International Workers' Day, which makes it very timely. For those listening at home, if you want to hear more about Ka Dunning's visit, he was not able to make it to Ottawa before the recording of this radio episode, but there will be more content about his visit coming up soon. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us on Rabble Radio today.
Thank you for having me.
Was Aaron Westaway from the Ottawa Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines and Rabble Labor reporter Gabriela Kalugay-Kasuga in conversation. Thank you so much for that, Gabby and Aaron. And now this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. To do that, let's hand things over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting this week with provincial news. An Ontario NDP MPP is calling out Doug Ford for his multiple attacks against healthcare in the province. Dr. Robin Lennox, the Ontario NDP MPP for Hamilton Centre, said in an interview with Rabble that Ford is underfunding hospitals while also making it difficult for Ontarians to access prescription drugs and secure housing. The federal government introduced a national pharmacare program in 2024, but Ontario has yet to sign on to the program. Dr. Lennox said, quote, "Right now, too many people in Ontario are making impossible choices between filling a prescription or paying rent, buying groceries or taking medication. Universal pharmacare is a practical, compassionate solution that would save lives and reduce costs across our entire healthcare system." End quote. In labor news this week, the Union of Taxation Employees, which represents workers at the Canada Revenue Agency, are calling out their employer for laying off workers. This comes at a time when more and more Canadians rely on Canada Revenue Agency services to ensure that they are receiving appropriate government benefits, like their tax refunds and other tax discounts. According to a recent survey by EQ Bank, 36% of respondents said that they will be relying on their tax return to make ends meet. The Union of Taxation Employees accused the Canada Revenue Agency of treating their members like seasonal workers. Their members often face layoffs as taxation season winds down, which Mark Briere, president of the Union of Taxation Employees, says is detrimental to the long-term health of the agency, saying, quote, "They let some people go, and now they're trying to bring them back. You don't have all the people coming back that you let go. All that training, all that money spent, and all that experience is not coming back." End quote. Briere and his union are calling on the government to provide their members with greater job stability. In health news, the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada is arguing that pro-choice advocates should avoid engaging in debates over later abortions. In an op-ed on Rabble, Dr. Roma Damaniscar argues that the issue of later-term abortions is often used as a wedge issue by those who oppose abortion entirely. Later abortions are very rare in Canada, making up only around 1% of all abortions each year. Later abortions are also performed for a variety of reasons, including issues with the health of the person who is pregnant and the fetus. Instead of engaging in debates over later abortions, Dr. Damaniscar says that pro-choice advocates should instead argue for the enforcement of the Canada Health Act, which guarantees access to reproductive care, as well as calling out organizations like so-called pregnancy centers, which often provide misleading information about abortion. And finally, Rabble columnist Lois Ross discusses the Donroe Doctrine. U.S. President Donald Trump recently coined that term to describe his foreign policy initiatives. It is a play on words of the more familiar and historic Monroe Doctrine. The Monroe Doctrine was a 19th century policy issued by U.S. President James Monroe that declared that the U.S. would oppose European intervention in the Americas. The Monroe Doctrine was used to justify U.S. intervention in the 19th and 20th century in Latin American and South American countries, including the violent military coups in countries like Guatemala and Chile. The so-called Donroe Doctrine seems to be largely a more aggressive continuation of this policy, with Trump making threats against Canada's sovereignty, kidnapping the Venezuelan president Nicolas Maduro, and blockading Cuba. Ross's column looks at how past U.S. actions compare to current policy and discusses how that could inform the future. As always, you can read the full version of all the stories we talked about today on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. To help support our show, please visit rabble.ca/donate, subscribe to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and now, join us over on Patreon for special bonus content. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca. Thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. And thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
This station and the more than 250 across the country like it need your support. Day in and day out, they bring you the news that matters. They play the music you won't hear anywhere else, and they are a part of this community. You can make sure they get the funding they need to grow by visiting mycri.ca, where you can find all the details about the Community Radio Initiative. It takes less than 5 minutes and a few clicks to generate an email to the politicians who need to hear from you. MyCRI.